From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I thought my obsession with angelica blooms was a serious one until recently, when I met today's guest, Sam Keach of the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, who takes it one step further. Sam has a passion for various other garden-worthy, umbel-shaped flowers, not just various angelicas, but other plants in the family related to carrots and parsley. More in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com. Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbooks, small gift books illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now.
Sam Keach is project manager for public landscapes at the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society in Philadelphia, where he creates ecologically driven designs, often in urban settings, enticing pollinators and other beneficials to enjoy the gardens as much as the many human visitors do. Hi, Sam. I'm so glad to talk to you and to have met and talked about umbels with you. How are
you? Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So before we get started on umbels and so forth, the PHS is probably best known for its annual Philadelphia Flower Show, but there's lots of other programming too. You do public landscapes, and so there's Correct. Public gardens, and there's Correct. All kinds of outreach programs, right?
Correct. The public gardens and landscapes department works throughout the city of Philadelphia. And so we're involved on the historic parkway with the Philadelphia Museum of Art, Third Am Museum, the Navy Yard, as well as Subaru and Camden. So we manage a bunch of different gardens, and I don't think people realize the extent of our impact. So we're all over.
Yeah. And lots of other really important programs supporting education and so forth. But again, people know about the flower show, which is coming up in not too long, right?
In June. Yeah, early June.
Yeah. So ecologically driven design, you tell me, but in an urban setting. So what the heck is that going on?
Right. So, you know, my background's is in, you know, native plants, and I went to school for landscape architecture. But with our department, we get to experiment. We get to plant, you know, really not necessarily exotic plants, but rare introductions. We get, you know, new genetics, and as well as the tried and true. So urban ecology is something that's, you know, unique. I wouldn't think of it in terms of restoration, but we plant things that host wildlife. So when we see insects present, we think that we're doing something beneficial. So the carrot family is one of the families that's not necessarily all native, but you see the activity with the plants, the species. So
you sure do. I mean, it's pretty amazing when I have a lot of angelica. I say gigas, some people say gigas, the Korean angelica, a biennial in my garden. And literally I can stand next to, you know, a few of the flower heads on one big, you know, plant. And I could stand there for an hour and not one of the bees or wasps or anybody who's on it cares a lick that I'm there. It's like, they just don't even look at me. They are so happy.
it's overwhelming. Like, you'll see bees, wasps, you know, everything is just there on one flower head. And, you know, I think people think of, you know, certain native flowers or pollinators but all the angelicas, I mean, another species in the Apiaceae, they're all pretty active. So they're easy to propagate for us in the urban environment, because they're so easy to propagate in a controlled manner. We can thin them the first year, since most are biennials. There's no chance of them escaping.
So. Right. So we'll talk about that. We're going to get some of your tips for how to sort of manage biennials and get them going, and your propagation hints and so forth, because it confounds a lot of gardeners. But first, so we have, who else is kind of in this family that you love? What other genera of plants? I mean, you have, we've talked a tiny bit about the angelicas, but there's lots of other possibilities, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of really fun species. In this area, there's a lot of different public gardens, and sometimes we'll get, you know, a few seeds or a plant Cecily gumnifera, gumniferum is the moon carrot, and we've been planting that. Yeah, the moon carrot, and it's, you know, it has the silver foliage. We planted at the Rodin Museum, and it is reliably coming back for us. So that's exciting. You know, there's so many to pick, but I think of the cut flower ones, the Ami Visnaga Dar or Green Mist, and then Daucus Carota Dara. So those are kind of, they're in the cut flower scene, but we use Green Mist, which is, you know, looks like a larger Queen Anne's lace flower. So
right.
Yeah. It's a great filler plant, and we put it in the mid border, and it's just very easy.
I see that Johnny's Selected Seeds and Select Seeds, a wonderful flower seed catalog and flower seedling catalog, both of those sell the Green Mist Ami. So and I think Dara also, the Daucus Carota with the dark, doesn't have dark stems and flowers.
Yeah, it's a darker head, and there's also one called Black Knight. So a lot of the Johnny's and you know, different seed companies will sell all three of them.
Yeah. So what else is in here? So Cecily, you said the moon carrot. I have to find out about moon carrots.
Some of the coveted ones, the ones that I've always wanted, is the giant fennel, Ferula communis. And there's also one called Pusadenum verticillare. And a gardener at the Scott Arboretum gave me just a few seeds. And over the years, you know, I've kept collecting them. But Pusadenum is, structurally, it's a much larger plant. It's very tall. So it's not for every garden. But Pusadenum is just, you know, it's a larger Solanum, which is another genus, Solanum Lucianum. And it's, I'd say, I mean, the ones that I have in my garden are probably like 7-8 feet tall.
Wow.
So big plants.
I see that. I've seen the common names of that as hog fennel or milk parsley, who the heck knows. And with that one, I see that sometimes you have to buy a plant. I saw that Plant World Seeds has some seeds, I think, but Plant Delights Nursery and Digging Dog, they both sell plants. So you could get a young plant and let it sow itself and so forth. Yeah. So you said a fennel. So there's other kinds of fennels too, I suppose, right?
Yeah. I have to put out a disclaimer. Bronze fennel, you know, it is a beautiful plant. We have used it in our sites, but you have to be very careful with the seeds. And the same goes with dill and, you know, a lot of the different ornamentals or, you know, even the edible or culinary plants. I would just stress that, you know, you'll learn your lesson when you let it go to seed, and the next year you have hundreds of fennel plants popping up. So be very careful about them sowing in your garden.
Right. And then, it's true. And what about is it Anthriscus, the chervils or chervil relatives?
Yeah. So Anthriscus, there's Raven's Wing, which is another kind of, you know, naturalizer, and we're trying to establish it. We're gonna contract grow it to plant it within these little niches in along the walkways, and it's kind of thrives in indirect light. So a lot of the ones that we're talking about that are biennials, they like sharp drainage or you know, full sun. And Anthriscus thrives kind of in that less intensive area. So we're going to put it along these walkways. And it's Raven's Wing has this darker tone foliage, which is really, really gorgeous.
Right. So again, when you say biennials to people or short-lived perennials, things that we want to have self-sow, and we're going to talk about controlling some of them, but you know, a lot of gardeners are like, well, I got a plant and now I don't have anything flowering this year. I got a plant last year. Well, okay. That's because it's a biennial, but so how do we get started, and how do we, like, a gardener at Wave Hill in New York, the public garden in New York, told me years ago, like, they would sort of mark off areas around the sort of mama plant where they wanted the babies to sow and make sure not to rake too much there or mulch too deeply there, you know, kind of make these zones, these safety zones for the biennials to sow into and so forth. You have to be conscious. So tell us a little bit about kind of how you manage them and propagate them and get them going.
Yeah, so I learned this trick because I garden with my father, and he weeds everything. And when you germinate angelicas or any of the biennials, the first year it's this really insignificant trifoliate, you know, set of leaves. And so when I placed them around the property, they would get weeded. But I started germinating them in bulb crates. You can do them in containers, you know, traditional, you know, line, you know, flats. But I like to just sprinkle them on a bunch of compost or potting soil in a flat, and I'll use like a hardwood thin layer gravel mix on the very top. And after the first year, they'll send down a taproot when they go dormant again. So the trick is transplanting the young juvenile plants early in their life cycle. So then during the first year, and I plant a lot of them and then I thin them later, but I mark the location with other plants and bulbs as well. So, you know, colchicum, some fall flowering ones, different spring ones, and have kind of having an arrangement in each location. It'll remind you this little guy is here, and people don't believe the display the following year. They don't think those little leaves are going to become this huge structural like inflorescence. So
right. The Angelica gigas, the Korean Angelica at my place, I mean, it loves, of course, like a lot of the biennials and self-sowing annuals and perennials, they love to sow into the cracks and crevices, you know. And so I tend to go around, I see them, you know, tiny little guys, like you said, with these three part, you know, these leaves, and I know who they are. And I go with my little hori-hori knife when it's moist in the early spring, and, you know, and I just kind of get a wedge out of the crack and put them in a tray, and I walk around the garden and I put them where I want them to be, right? Like I create the pictures with them, you know. They provide plants for me, the mother plant does, the previous generation does, but I move them around. So it's kind of like what you're saying, but you actually collect the seeds and sow them intentionally in a more controlled environment, and then make those babies. Yeah.
You can do it both ways. And I think it's nice when it kind of naturalizes, but you know, you just have to keep in mind it's the next year. And sometimes they're so subtle, you miss them. But if they naturalize, the Angelica gigas, when it's such a beautiful plant that if it seeds in, I usually let them go and then thin them the following year, because it's worth it.
Right. So I find also the ones that get the most statuesque, and some of them get quite big, like way over my head, with many, many, many arms, like a big candelabra kind of crazy thing. The ones that get the biggest are the ones that sowed themselves, you know, that I didn't disturb that taproot even when it was young, you know, I mean, Yeah.
The taproot is, you know, it's funny. Like I remember somebody asked me for smaller plants, and you don't realize how deep it gets really deep. So when you go to transplant, it's you'll get the tricks down. You'll kind of play it by ear. But if you actually try and transplant them with the taproot, it won't work. You know, you'll figure out the timing.
Right. So if the garden centers are going to open before long, and you know, people are going to go to the garden center. And sometimes, I mean, the first time I saw this, I was horrified. I saw my beloved Angelica in a big pot, you know, a blooming sized plant, like a second year plant. Because again, these are biennials. It doesn't bloom the first year. It blooms the second. And there, you know, it was like $20-something or something, you know. And I thought to myself, okay, the poor person who brings that home is going to have this fabulous thing for a minute or for a month or whatever. And then next year isn't going to have any, and it's going to wonder what they did wrong. So what should we do if we want to get started with biennials? Should we get like a plant and some seed, or?
That's the thing. That might work for some people, but what I would do if they did take that home is collect the seed, because the seeds remain viable.
Right.
So I think with biennials, it's really a seed game, you know, and planning ahead. So you can stagger the sowings each year, but with that person could bring that plant home, let it go to seed, you know, collect the seeds when they're dry, and store them in the refrigerator or germinate them that year. So, I mean, I really think of this as you know, one of the most efficient families, because when you grow things from seed, it's just more about foresight than effort. You know, it's just about, you know, sowing, placing that seed in a little bit of material, and you're good to go. And then remembering, you know, it's all about planning. So with very little effort, you get these incredible displays. So it's For me, it's one of the most, you know, dynamic families. You can just kind of put this little plant and it's dormant for the first year. It's kind of, you know, tucked away. And then the next year it surprises everybody.
Right. So the one thing that they'd also have to do if they wanted flowers next year is buy another $20 plant.
Yeah. You don't do that. Sow the seeds consistently.
Yeah. But you won't have any in year two if you don't. Right. Do you know what I mean? You have to wait. You're going to skip a year, right? Yeah,
don't go out and buy Angelica. that's the lesson.
Right. $40 later, two plants later, right? You might get started, but
I have to say, when you collect the seeds, you'll see there's other Angelicas out there. There's, you know, that's the fun part is finding different sources of seed. It can be tough. But we have a native Angelica. There's Angelica atropurpurea. There's Archangelica. There's so many that are out there that when you know, shopping for seed and getting them is as fun as sometimes germinating them.
Right. So there's another one that I tried. It was like the a few years ago, it was like the next best new thing. And I can't remember which one it was. I don't know if it was atropurpurea or which one.
Or there's ebony as well. And so
I didn't do so well with those. Mm-hmm.
We've been growing angelic ebony. And it's a darker foliar tone and it's beautiful. It has kind of a smoky pink flower, but there's Angelica stricta purpurea. And that is kind of it's very dynamic. The flowers kind of change in tone and it is gorgeous. I would say it's tied with Solanum in terms of it's just very elegant. So mm-hmm. that those tones are rare and they're very elegant.
So what about the control? You talked a little bit about the control. So we have to be observant, and I have what I call the National Collection of dill. You know, I have like, dill everywhere. If I, other than the seeds that are in the ground that would still be good for a number of years in the future, I mean, if I deadheaded all the dill, if I didn't let any of it go to seed, I could reduce that, you know. I used to have other things that did that, and I gradually got ahead of it. So we're going to collect our seed that we need for propagating and so forth, but what are we deadheading? We're maybe avoiding growing certain ones.
I would definitely. So I let my plants go to seed. But typically I'll actually collect the seeds. So I'm not worried about them becoming rampant. And I think people should get to know the species, grow one plant, and also get, if you know your soil, I find that these typically germinate much easier on looser soil. So if you have sharp drainage or gravelly soil. I find that they're much more prolific, especially like that of fennels. So if you have loose soil, you know, sharp drainage, beware. Don't let them go to seed. And so it's more about like the cycles. And so you want to collect them for propagating, but you also want to kind of control them. And I think it was Stephanie Cohen who talked about how you should just let Angelica, you know, if you're lucky enough to have it propagate, let it go because it's so, so beautiful. And, I did that over a few years, and eventually though, it became like Angelica land, you know, it was just in every bed. My dad loved it. My garden, I kind of control it. I kind of have it as a central element. So you have to be careful. You do have to monitor your garden. That's just part of gardening. So I would recommend deadheading first and foremost.
Yeah. Right. So some of these other ones, I mean, I'm totally enchanted now, of course, not just the other Angelicas, but like that crazy sounding Pusidanum.
Pusidanum,
and the Solanum that you've talked about. By the way, I saw that a couple of nurseries, one that I don't know in Maryland, Putnam Hill Nursery. Have you ever heard about that? Putnam Hill Nursery?
I don't know.
They have plants. And Annie's annuals out in California, they usually have it. She loves it, but it's out of stock right now when I last looked, but I bet it'll be back again. So they are available. You know, sometimes you have to wait to get a start of some of these more unusual things, right?
Right. And so that's another species that you'll see it here. You'll share it with friends, but I only know a few gardeners who had seeds. So I you know, it's something that I've always kind of, you know, lusted after. I've always wanted it. It's the leaves are unique. You know, as you start to collect the different species, the foliage just has different, you know, it's cut very finely. Right. And those different characteristics, you want them in your garden. So I've been searching for it for years. It's often hard to find seed. And when you do, it becomes very rewarding.
Huh. Well, maybe you're going to have to buy one of these baby plants and grow it out for seed.
Or you can share it with, you know, we can share the seeds.
Uh-oh. This could get really dangerous, you know. And my Angelicas will be very angry if I let anybody else in, I think, because they are the star from July to September, right?
Right.
We have, you know, a few minutes, 3-4 minutes left. And I just want to ask you, I know that obviously you don't just use umbel-shaped flowers in your gardens. Another big hit there is the composites, is the daisy sort of family or whatever. Yes. And those are big attractions for people and for beneficial insects, aren't they?
Yeah. So the composites, I that's just a massive topic, but
for people to paint a visual picture of some of the diversity that you're working with in the ecologically driven designs. Yeah.
Yeah. We have dozens of different, you know, daisy family species in our designs and different roles. They are really kind of woven into our sites. And so if you visit Philadelphia, you'll see Rudbeckia autumn sun, different Rudbeckias. We trial everything. So we have the opportunity to just plant them in different settings throughout the city. One of the best examples is Eastern State Penitentiary. If you go there, we have dozens of Rudbeckias up there with different grasses. So we have Sorghastrum Newtons, and Rebecca is very simple. And it's just one of those demonstration gardens in the city that's to showcase the urban context. And, right. You know, I love when people visit our sites. We have volunteers, but PHS does so much, and it's getting people involved. So I invite anybody to come out to the penitentiary and help me plant more plants. But
and so you do have volunteers, don't you?
Yeah, we do. But that's one of the families that's everyone's favorite. You know, midsummer, after the heat picks up, some stuff looks kind of tired, and the Rudbeckias pick up and they bloom for a very long time. But there's a ton of different species in that family. So
yeah. And so in the last couple of minutes, anything in your home garden, are you coveting or have you acquired anything new for the home garden this year?
Year, I think my favorite thing, I finally bought Gladiolus Boone, which is a hardy gladiolus.
Oh.
And that's what I'm most excited about. And it's shorter in stature. It's hardy. It's almost like this peach tone. And I have it with Sanguisorba blackthorn. And Aragrostis elodii, which is left over from last year's flower show. And I'm excited. The combination it's different, you know, and that's what's fun about it.
Any new umbels this year at all? Any, have you?
Cecily, it's the first time I'm growing it at home. So the public PHS sites, we've planted it. I've never grown it at home. So I'm gonna, I'm trying to gauge how fast it'll, you know, what role it's gonna have in my garden.
Okay. Well, it's very interesting. I mean, I'm kind of excited about all of these. I mean, Orlea. I mean, I didn't even know that genus. So I'm like, what the heck is that?
And that's one of those cyclical plants. Like it was very, I thought of it as an older plant, and it kind of became in vogue because one of the public gardens in our area grew it, and people became really excited by it. But it's such an easy plant to sow. And I knew it from cut flower fields long ago. So things come back in style. And Orlea is one of the new favorites.
Yeah, exciting. Well, Sam Keach of the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society, I'm so glad to talk to you. And I have a feeling we're going to be having more conversations before long. So thank you so much for turning me on.
Thank you so much for having me. Had fun.
Okay. Talk soon.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Programming and underwriting support from Royal Botanic Gardens, publishers of Kew Pocketbook Small Gift Books Illustrated from Kew's vast collection of botanical art. The most recent book, Fungi, about the strange and singular world of mushrooms, toadstools, and their kin. In bookstores now. Underwriting support from Color Blends, supplying top-quality spring-blooming Dutch flower bulbs to landscape professionals and ambitious home gardeners. More information on the web, colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.